I'm Darren Levy, and this is Citywide, airing every Tuesday evening from 7:30 to 8 p.m. right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org and New York University Radio. Citywide features insight from some of New York's most innovative artists. Today we are talking with Sharon Appel. She is a very talented painter, and she makes creative pastel and glitter paintings and prints, and she designed, launched, and is managing the World Trade Center Print Fundraiser. Proceeds are going to benefit the Verified Voting Foundation. And now, here to talk with us is Sharon. Thank you very much for joining us here on Citywide.
Thank you, Darren. It's great to be here.
How would you describe your artwork?
Most of my work consists of landscapes and seascapes, and it's based on my travels to the tropics, and in particular to the South Pacific. So the paintings depict beaches and mountains and islands, paradisal places like places you'd visit in your dreams. In addition to the basic image, though, there are three central things going on in the work. One is the concept expressed in the work, and by that I mean the spirit and ideas that the work reflects. And that concept is actually usually a place, or the idea of a place, a stunningly beautiful, far-flung place, typically a beach or other pastoral location. And when you look at the painting, you have the feeling of being in a dream or being in some paradisal place. It's like you're looking at this amazing sight, and you feel like it's real, but not quite. It's as though you're seeing the scene depicted in the work through some lens of longing. You're there because in your mind you're there, and in your mind you want to be there. But could you really be there? Does the place exist? So your mind shifts back and forth between being there, being drawn into the landscape or seascape or whatever it is, and feeling that it's real. And on the other hand, wondering if you're dreaming and if what you're looking at is a depiction of your longing or the artist's longing. The second thing going on in the work is there's a lot of motion in it. Everything's moving, the water, the sky, the mountains. I do a lot of patterning, tiny little dots and lines and other shapes. And when you look at the work, especially from a distance, the patterning makes it feel like everything is moving. But at the same time that everything's moving, the painting also reflects the contradictory feeling of a moment frozen in time. It's as though the idyllic scene depicted in the painting is in suspended animation. But at the same time, it's also reverberating. The patterning creates a feeling of reverberation and makes it feel like that perfect moment in time will reverberate forever and therefore last forever. The patterning just keeps going on and on. And then there's another thing going on in the work, and that is the technique and schools of art that it relates to. And in terms of technique, it has elements of impressionism and expressionism, and pointillism, but in terms of schools of art history and the concepts it expresses, it's also related to symbolism, which deals with reality and dreams and the borderline between reality and dreams, and surrealism, which involves the idea that reality is comprised of the combination of objective reality and the individual's subjective experience of it. So I guess in a nutshell, that's how I would describe it.
So are those some of your influences, surrealism and all that, or do you have other influences?
The surrealism and the symbolism are definitely important influences, but I'd say that a number of other things have sort of affected me and impelled me to do art and have helped me to develop my own form of artistic expression. And in terms of, if I were looking for one particularly important event or influence, it would definitely be this trip that I took through Southeast Asia and the South Pacific. It was a 3.5-month trip, and I just saw the most amazing sights that you could possibly imagine, beaches, mountains, rainforests, glaciers, temples, and the experience of seeing those places was just so mind-boggling and delightful. My mind was just completely blown, actually, and ever since being there and being on that trip, I've just felt this sort of like this tidal wave of imagery in my head that just had to come out. So that's what the art is. It's kind of an outpouring of that trip. And not only the amazing sights that I saw, but just the feeling of euphoria and just being astounded that I experienced when I saw all that stuff. To give you an example of how that happened, or the single most influential event from that trip, I would say it would definitely be the first day of the trip when I was in Bangkok and walked through a doorway and into a courtyard that houses a temple of the Emerald Buddha, which is this amazingly ornate structure. And I saw all these other beautiful and bizarre structures just rising up out of the ground, things that I couldn't really even describe to you. They're things that we certainly don't have in New York, just bizarre temples and things called chedis and prongs, which are other ceremonial structures. And it was just like being in Alice in Wonderland's dreams, to see things made out of gold and with such amazing detail, ceramics and cut glass and cut stones and everything just glistening and glittering in the sunlight. It also was just amazingly hot, you know, 90 degrees, 100 degrees, and all this stuff just glittering in this amazingly bright light. And looking at all this and never having seen anything like it, I just felt like I was dreaming, and I just couldn't believe it was real. And I think that feeling of just being completely awed and not really believing what was in front of me is at the core of my art. I think that it's at the heart of this feeling of suspended animation, and this feeling that you're looking at something that's frozen in time, but at the same time it's just reverberating, meaning that it's just kind of echoing and going to last forever. So that should give you a flavor for what has impelled me to do art. But you also asked about, more generally, about my influences and what has influenced the particular form of artistic expression that I've developed. And I would say that another factor is the fact that, in addition to being an artist, I'm also a lawyer. And my experience as a lawyer is part of what's triggered my art, and that what I'm doing in art is the polar opposite of what I did in law. As an attorney, you're always a voice for someone else. It's all very rational and analytical, and it involves a kind of sublimation of your own feelings and preferences because they don't matter. They're irrelevant. You're there to represent someone else and to promote their interests. This process of suppressing your own subjective response and replacing it with one that is, for some reason, appropriate caused me to become very interested in that aspect of human experience that is pre-verbal or non-verbal. And when I say that, what I mean is, I think that when you first experience something, you have a kind of visceral or gut reaction to it. And then I think that what happens is your mind steps in and it starts interpreting that feeling and translating it into words. So what I'm interested in is the raw experience of feeling at the moment that you actually experience something. And what I've discovered through making art is that art captures that feeling, at least for me. So one of the things I'm doing when I make art is expressing the feelings that I experienced at a particular moment in time, the moment that I perceived a spectacular view, for example. And then I'm reflecting in the painting on the feeling of wonder and bedazzlement that I felt when I chanced upon that view. A few other things also come into play here that are sort of related to these themes of perception and emotion and experience. And one is the idea that you, the individual, have some control over how you experience the world. You can shape your perception to some extent, depending on your goal. And at least with visual perception, you can shift back and forth between viewing what's before you from the point of view of objective or photographic reality, and then viewing it subjectively as your mind has transformed it. So let's say I'm at some beach in the northeast, USA, on the shores of Lake Champlain in Vermont, for example, with the Adirondacks rising up out of the water in the distance. And the water is a kind of dark or pea green. When I sit down to paint that scene, I'm going to paint the water turquoise, and I'm going to make the mountains gigantic. There'll be some sort of volcanic-looking towering peaks. And then the question will become, why have I painted them like that? Why have I painted them as they're not? And the answer is that I'm painting them as I want them to be. I'm choosing to perceive them through this new South Seas lens of my mind. So when I paint Lake Champlain and the Adirondacks, they're more like an idea. They're a starting point. They're a launching pad for me to return to Polynesia, to the Polynesia that I experienced, the Polynesia sort of my dreams made real. And then there's one final thing that that I think is reflected in my work, and that's my belief in the idea of the individual and the integrity of the individual and the fundamental right of each individual to be free and to think freely. And here I'm thinking of writers like James Joyce in Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man and Somerset Maugham in The Moon and Sixpence, which is based on the life of Gauguin, and The Razor's Edge. And in these books, the focus is on the individual as apart from society, observing society and developing a completely unique sense of self, unburdened by the constraints of society. And in a slightly different vein, I'm also thinking of the great Italian film director Fellini, who really celebrates the individual and demonstrates a great respect for the individual and great compassion for all of humankind. And I think that this focus on the individual and celebrating the individual is reflected in one of the techniques that I employ in my work, which is a kind of pointillism or divisionism, where instead of blending large areas of color, I instead use tiny little dots and lines and other shapes, and I leave each little unit of color standing on its own. It's as though, to me, each unit of color is a perfect and complete being in its own right. It's like a moment of perfection in itself. I seem to have this imperative to work in tiny units of color. It's not really like I set out to do that, but that's what I end up doing. And you have all these tiny bits of color, and they're all swirling together in this kind of harmony. And I think that this reflects my own view of the world and my embracing of the concept of the individual, my view that each person is completely unique and that there's a whole world of individuals completely unique. My utopian aspirations for the world, and also a kind of marveling at the fact, where I see it as a fact, that each individual has the potential to transform the world or part of it, and you never know who's going to end up doing that. So in my work, there are just zillions of tiny little dots and lines, and on the one hand, they're all individual, they all stand on their own, but on the other hand, you look at them from a distance, and the fact that they all work together is what makes the painting. So those are my influences in not exactly a nutshell.
You're listening to Citywide on WNYU 89.1 FM New York. I'm Darren Levy, and I'm talking with Sharon Appel, who is a painter. Now, how do you work? How do you start and finish a piece?
Let's see, the nuts and bolts. I start with an idea, the idea of a place, whether I'm actually there working on location or working from photographs. So I start with this idea, and then I start putting color down on the paper in a way that somehow effectuates the idea. The first thing I do when I get to a beach, for example, is I size up the view from different spots. I'll just walk around and sort of cut my hands over my eye and try and figure out from which vantage point I'll get the most dramatic view with the most dramatic contrast. because that's what I like to paint. I like contrast, and that's why I like the South Seas and anything Pacific, really, with mountains, gigantic mountains jutting out of the water. So the first thing I do is pick a dramatic view, and then I frame it compositionally, almost as though I were taking a photo of it. And then I do a basic outline of the scene on paper, and that's the scariest part. You're sitting there with a blank paper, nothing on it, but you have this feeling of terrible excitement, like, this view is so beautiful, how can I get it from my head onto the paper? So what I do is just focus very intently on what I'm looking at, and I see it kind of through a lens of abstraction, and it starts to seem like a very simple puzzle piece with maybe four or five pieces. The sea, the sand, the sky, maybe a range of giant mountains jutting out of the water. And I view each element of that landscape as an independent being in its own right, and then I proceed to animate each element, because each element is, to me, alive. So the question for me becomes, how does it feel to be that coastline? How does it feel to be that wave? And I ask these questions as I take in the sights around me and as I attempt to portray on paper whatever it is that I see. And again, it's always through this very subjective lens. It's not like I'm trying to do some photographic representation. And once I get the outline down on paper, and it can be a very rough outline, but it's just an outline of the basic elements of the composition, then I sort of breathe a sigh of relief, because I've got the basic components of the scene down. And I usually work in pastel. That's my primary medium. And I work in complementary colors. So I'll start with the opposite of what I intend to end up with. So if I want to end up with a lot of blues and greens, my first layer on the paper will be a lot of oranges and reds. So that's sort of it. I just kind of keep going layer by layer by layer, and I don't really try to rush.
Where did you learn to do all that? Did you just figure it out, or did you take classes on that?
I studied at an art school, at a tiny little art school, and then actually I went off to the South Seas, and I just started working on location, and at a certain point everything just started clicking. It was just amazing. It's like out of a novel or something. It's like I was on this really remote beach on this really remote island, and from one painting to the next there was just this quantum leap forward. I suddenly began to understand how to work with the pastels and how to get this amazing color and how to get on the paper the drama that I was feeling inside me by just beholding these amazing sights and being in these amazing places. So it was kind of a magical process. And then when I got back from the trip, I started studying privately with a teacher. And we sort of focused on complementary colors. But actually, we'd been doing that before I went away. The person I studied with is Tad Spurgeon. In the classes that he taught, he spoke about complementary colors. So I'd already been working with that before I went away.
I know you drew a painting of the World Trade Center. Would you like to talk about that?
Right. Yeah, that painting is actually, I titled that painting Our Friends, the Twin Towers. So that painting arose out of the events of September 11th, 2001, and my reaction to it, to those events. I started working on a painting of the Brooklyn Bridge and the World Trade Center, which is the image depicted in the painting, as a way of sort of channeling my sadness and outrage over the events toward a positive end. So kind of in keeping with that positive spirit, I called it Our Friends, the Twin Towers. I'm from New York City originally, and for me, the attack on the Trade Center was was an attack on all of New York City and my hometown, and what in my view is one of the most tolerant places in the world. Also, I feel that New York City has been such a refuge and held out so much hope for so many people from so many backgrounds. So many people have come to New York with nothing and transformed their lives. And I felt that it was so outrageous and cruel that anyone would attack that anyone would just try to blow it all up. And my feeling was that despite the barbarism and depravity of these attacks, that nothing could shake the spirit of New York City and the people of New York. Nothing could destroy the promise of hope that the city has historically held out. So I started working on the painting. The Brooklyn Bridge is symbolic of the hope and opportunity and the welcoming or at least tolerance of immigrants that the city has always embodied. And Brooklyn, because that's where I'm from. And I left the towers standing as a tribute to them and a tribute to those who perished and those who sought to save people. And as a symbol of the fact that nothing can destroy the spirit of the people of New York. They rise above it. They rise above the barbarian acts of their attackers. Nothing can corrupt the generous spirit of the people of New York City. And I think the mood's sort of nostalgic and wistful and as if through a dream, because that's how my work is generally, and that's just how it came out. I hadn't consciously set out to do that. So that's where the painting comes from. It was sort of my companion for many, many months after the events, and you know, it was sort of like my place of refuge from the horror.
Is it big news in Vermont about how about what they're going to be doing with the World Trade Center memorial? Have they been talking about that in the news at all?
I don't think that it's as big news in Vermont as
yeah.
as it is in New York City.
Mm. Very interesting. And so I know for your World Trade Center print, you're going to be donating money to the Verified Voting Foundation.
Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you a little bit about this fundraiser idea that I came up with. We just talked about the painting, the World Trade Center painting, our friends at Twin Towers, and what inspired that. As I was explaining, in my view, the attacks were not only on New York City, but also on the concept of New York City, the concept of openness and freedom and transformation. And those concepts are at the core of what I'm doing in my art. And I decided that I wanted to dedicate my painting to promoting these concepts. And then ironically, I found that in the time after the attacks of September 11th, that the traditions of openness and freedom that are at the core of American democracy have come under attack here in the USA by Americans. So I dreamt up this idea to create this World Trade Center print fundraiser as a way of promoting these concepts at home. And I decided specifically that I wanted to do an election rights fundraiser to promote democracy here in the USA. So that's what the fundraiser's about. I took the painting, and I had a limited edition archival print made from it. It's a big print. It's about 21 inches by 30 inches with a 3-inch border. And I'm selling the print on my website, as you pointed out, as a way to raise money for the Verified Voting Foundation. And Verified Voting is a nonpartisan, nonprofit group that's dedicated to protecting voting rights in the USA and ensuring specifically that electronic voting machines produce a voter-verified paper trail so that voters can make sure that the vote that is recorded for them is in fact the vote they intended to cast. And so that recounts and audits can be performed where there's any suspicion of voting irregularities. So if anyone out there listening is interested in promoting this nonpartisan effort, or if you just want to see the painting, then please check out my website. It's www.sharonappel.com, and the print is posted on the homepage.
And I know on your website you have another print for sale, The Aqueous Buddha.
Right. That is a print that I'm having made from a painting that I did titled Aqueous Buddha. And Aqueous Buddha is sort of like a conglomeration of all the Buddhas I saw when I was traveling, and the feeling of peace and serenity that I experienced from seeing these Buddhas. Although Aqueous Buddha is primarily water, and there's just kind of a small Buddha's head sort of submerged in the water that you see after you look at the painting for a while. The source of the painting really is an experience I had in Thailand in a ceremonial center called Sukhothai Historical Park, where there seemed to be thousands and thousands of Buddhas just scattered in this sort of like ghost town kind of grounds, just gigantic Buddhas made out of stone, all different kinds of Buddhas, and some of them decorated in sashes, saffron sashes that I guess locals had draped them in. And you just kind of walk through this gigantic park, or maybe ride a bicycle through it, and there's no one around, and everywhere you look, there are these giant Buddhas, and you have no idea where they came from and what civilization created them and where the people are who created them. You know, apparently it was all so long ago, and all that's left are these giant Buddhas, and it's just sort of mind-boggling. And on the other hand, it's very peaceful because that's all there is, and the wind is blowing, and it's very hot out, and it's sunny, and the sky is blue, and there are just all these Buddhas looking incredibly serene. So I based my painting on one of the Buddhas that I saw there, a photograph that I had taken, and I just put it in water. This summer when I started working on the painting, I spent a lot of time riding my bike around a gigantic lake and just kind of infusing myself with the feeling of water. And I think that feeling of water just kind of going forever is reflected in the painting. And you can see the painting on my website, and I will be offering that print for sale as well.
So what other future plans do you have?
Well, the World Trade Center print is fundraiser is an ongoing thing, and I've got that for sale on my website. I'm also represented in Montreal by Galerie d'Art Contemporain, which is at 2165 Crescent Street, around the block from the Museum of Fine Arts. So if you're going to be in Montreal, feel free to go into the gallery and check out my work. And closer to home, to New York City, I'm going to be in a show at Guildhall in East Hampton, Long Island. Then it's going to go through June 3rd. So that's what I've got going on for starters.
All right, well, it looks like we're going to have to wrap up soon. But before we do, what advice do you have for aspiring artists?
Let's see. I think that the most important thing that I've learned is to just do what I want visually and give myself free rein to try anything out that occurs to me. And then especially when you start a piece, even if it's completely new to you and outside your realm of experience or expertise or what you think you can do, just take a leap of faith and keep going with it. The most important thing is to keep going and not to stop to judge it or critique it. And then after you've worked on it for a while, ask yourself, what do you have to do to make the piece stand as a unified, cohesive whole so that it can just stand on its own and be a finished piece? And then just keep going with it. Whatever you do, don't try and make the work comport with some image you had in your head when you started. Just work with what you ended up creating and stick with that until you've transformed it so that it can stand on its own and be an independent piece.
Well, it's some great advice, and I love your work. It was great talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, Darren, thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure.
For more information about Sharon's work, you can visit www.sharonappel.com. That's SharonAppel.com. And that's it for Citywide. I'm Darren Levy. You can email your comments about today's show to citywide@wnyu.org. Visit Citywide on the web at wnyu.org/citywide. Citywide won't be back next week, but it'll be returning later this summer. But for now, keep it here on New York University Radio, because up next is experimental acoustic music with Crumb Show on Outside. Thanks so much for tuning in. And from everyone here at WNYU News, have a great night.